You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Use discount code PT10 for 10% off Packers tickets. Expires August 31st. That's discount code PT10 at ticketking.com.
Packers Therapy. It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave. Done with the practice games. This is a tremendous blessing to get done with these games. Watching them on TV is hard. I can only imagine what it's like watching them in person. But I don't have to imagine it. I can have Dave about his trip to Kansas City with his daughter and son-in-law to watch the chefs take on our beloved Green Bay Packers. Dave, I'm going to let you start out here and tell us all about your voyage, 3.5 hours across the great state of Missouri to watch the Chiefs and Packers at what used to be Arrowhead Stadium. I don't know what it's called now. So take it.
Yeah, it's the GEHA. I don't think it's that they actually say it. It's the GEHA at Arrowhead. And I never found out what GEHA stands for.
Are you sure it's in jihad? Is that a...
I know it wasn't that.
Okay. All right.
maybe it's an insurance company or something, but the GEHA at Arrowhead, I think, is what it's now called. Lovely, lovely name. My experience was really interesting. Thanks for asking. As we drove across, my son-in-law is a diehard Chiefs fan. I mean,
oh wow,
just really into it. Went to a game when he was young and just kind of fell in love with the Chiefs at that point. His dad's a big fan. So as we are driving across, you know, I got to hear a little bit about the Chiefs and I made a mistake.
Len Dawson's death was that a topic of conversation?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is he started to talk about Len Dawson. He said he heard he had passed away. I didn't know when, but I feigned a yawn when he was talking about the Chiefs.
Okay.
As at the start of, you know, the back and forth as we ripped each other about the Packers and the Chiefs. But I didn't realize that as he was telling me, he just died. It's probably the most rude thing ever. So we drove to Kansas City, and the stadium in Kansas City is the same. They share the parking lot with the Kansas City Royals baseball team. So it's kind of a huge sort of sports complex that's there. And we checked into a hotel, which this is a public service announcement. If you do go to a Chiefs or Royals game, do not stay at a hotel anywhere near those stadiums. They are crap. We picked a Best Western because wanted to be able to park and walk because I thought, here's the thing is my daughter couldn't get off work until a bit late. And I thought the game starts at 7:00. We're going to get there around 6:00. So we got to. You know, I'm thinking of Lambeau Field as my perspective is we got to get there and make this easy for ourselves. So I picked a hotel that was next to the stadium and we'll just walk in. Well, what I learned is that for Kansas City Chiefs games, they don't fill out the stadium. I know that they are very good fans. I think, you know, when I think of really loyal fans, you know, the Steelers, the Packers, I would put the Chiefs up there that they have a really loyal following. They're really loud in their stadium. Like they said that they were the loudest stadium. Right. But I don't know if any of that's true, but, we get to the stadium and it's a really easy walk into the stadium and kind of walked right through the gates and sat down in our section. And, I thought, oh, this will be nice if, we can keep maybe a seat open next to us. Mm-hmm. The entire section was empty for the most part.
I saw you posted a picture about that, and I thought, well, he must have just found an empty, you know, and he was going to lampoon them. He was going to clown the Chiefs fans, but probably that's common.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look across the stadium, it looked about 3/4 full, and I guess just where our tickets were, there was just an empty section, which was nice because it was about 85 to 90 degrees, and not having some, you know, fat guy sitting next to me all sticky was kind of nice. So
me, in other words, yeah.
I did say it. so we got to space out and watch the game, and but I was a little surprised by that. The other thing I noticed with Kansas City is they have a ring of fame, just like they do, you know, at Lambeau.
At Lambeau or Dallas and other places, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I recognize no one's name.
Not Len Dawson even?
You know, Len Dawson was up there, yes. I think he was on the ring. Jan Stenerud was on there.
Of course, Terry Tate, right? He was up there.
I don't recall. Now, I may have not been able to see the ring as maybe it circled over my head. I could only see sort of one section of it.
He was the office linebacker, right, from those great ads. Oh, I just assumed that he'd be up there, right?
Was he at Kansas City? Office linebacker.
He had on a Chiefs-like jersey, so I always assumed, you know, that it was Big Jim Slade. You remember him, right?
Was he the guy that did the chefs in the? He spelled it incorrectly in the end zone. Is that the guy?
That was a character from Kentucky Fried Movie. Big Jim Slade would burst into different scenes, and one of them. Well, I won't go into it now, but during the scene, a couple was. The process of making love, the guy was having difficulties. And so Big Jim Slade bursts in and they announce him as being a former tight end for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I just, again, this guy must be in the Ring of Fame, right? Along with Terry Tate. Yeah.
I should have had you with me because he might have been. I didn't recognize him.
I would have clowned your son-in-law so bad.
Well, and I guess Derek Thomas, right? Wasn't he guy passed away? I'm sure he's up there. I didn't see his name, but
great player. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Chiefs go all the way back to the first Super Bowl, right? I mean, this was a rematch of Super Bowl number one.
Yes, it was indeed.
So they have maybe not the history that the Packers have, but they have a lot of players over the years. And I guess the history of Kansas City Chiefs is not on my radar at all.
Well, they've won a couple of Super Bowls, right?
Yeah. They have. Yeah, I guess they won the third or fourth, and then with Mahomes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they did a tribute to Len Dawson, who had just passed away, who I remember as an announcer on the HBO show.
Yes.
This Week in Football or whatever.
Right. Yeah, or This Week in the NFL. And he was also the guy, the iconic photo of him sitting on a folding chair at halftime, smoking a heater with a bottle of Coke underneath his chair. I mean, the NFL was different in those days.
Well, one thing that was strange is on the very first play, and I guess maybe you heard about all this on TV, is Mahomes lined up in the huddle.
Yeah.
And then I thought, is the game started? It looks like the clock is running. I don't understand what's happening. Yeah. Then there was a delay of game. I thought, that's a weird way to start. And then the Packers declined it. I thought, okay, what is going on? Never figured it out until I think the next day. I guess that was some kind of tribute to Len Dawson.
Right, exactly. Yes. They made it clear on TV. And I thought it was a really nice moment because, you know, I'm old enough to remember that first Super Bowl. You know, watched it. In fact, I watched it again not long ago. And I, you know, recall him winning and him being on the HBO show. So I really thought, you know, that was a nice thing that the Chiefs did.
I thought so. If I were the Packers, I would have taken the penalty, get him a first and 15. I would have pulled the rug out from under him.
Boy, you are a take-no-prisoners guy.
Oh, and, you know, my poor son-in-law, every play that went against the Packers, I'm yelling, like, that guy got held. Like, that's hometown refs. I thought, and then somewhere in the third, fourth quarter, I thought, yeah, I don't need to be so indignant about every bad play that the Packers. I let him enjoy his Chiefs, for goodness sake. But I did. There was a touchdown where a guy got grabbed. I thought, and it's right in front of me. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that's a penalty there. And I think my son-in-law was just like, whatever. So that was all fine. But yeah, the Chiefs, I guess I just was kind of struck by the lack of history that I understand with the Chiefs. The other thing is just seeing a game in another stadium.
Yeah,
it's just so unsettling that, you know, all the timeouts, you get highlights of Chief games or, you know, it's Travis Kelce speaking now. Like, you know, I'm used to seeing my guys and my highlights and things like that. So when you see it with someone else, it feels like you're in a bizarro world of in a football stadium, but it's not my stadium. It's a weird experience.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the time because I'm glad it was a preseason game because you didn't really have to care about it. And I will say the stadium was very nice, but not like Lambeau. I mean, Lambeau Field, not only is it just historic, it just, everything about it just seems much more clean and new. And even though it was a very nice stadium at Kansas City, I just, the whole thing about Lambeau is just so much better. And maybe I can't separate myself from the fact that it's the Packers stadium, but I just felt everything about it was just better in Green Bay.
You know, I haven't been to a lot of other NFL, say maybe half a dozen other than Lambeau, but it is a weird experience. And then I think, you know, it's like going to a different country. You appreciate your own country oftentimes a lot more when you've been somewhere else. And I think it's the same thing with, you know, sports stadiums. If you like your team's stadium, especially, you go someplace else and you're sort of, that's your frame of reference and you compare them. So it's always interesting to see how the other people live and their traditions and what they do. And you can't help though, but you know, feel like a foreigner.
It is. It's exactly right. That's how it felt as a foreigner. And what interesting, I thought the stadium held 70 to 80,000 people.
Yeah. I thought so too.
But the stadium dips down on the end zones. And so it's sort of an iconic looking stadium. My son-in-law was telling me, and I thought, oh, I guess that's true. I don't know if that's true with other stadiums, but it really, it dips down. And I thought they're losing a lot of seats there. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, well, they still have a lot of seats because I think it's just flattened out much more. Where at Lambeau, I think they have scrunched in, know, they built straight up as opposed to, you know, flatten it further and further out. So I felt like you weren't as on top of the action as you were at Lambeau, given how kind of where we were in the with our seats. So I think another thing I just would appreciate Lambeau for that much more. But even just the atrium, you know, the huge Super Bowl trophy, and it just, you don't get that at other stadiums. The Hall of Fame is right there, the restaurants, all that. We were on a club level, so it was a nice, you know, restaurant kind of feel, was clean and stuff like that. But it just, it just made me appreciate Lambeau that much more.
Well, Lambeau was the place for those that like to be on top. I've always said that about Lambeau Field.
Have you? Yeah, there you go.
Yo, hey, now speaking of feeling like a foreigner, this might be the time to talk about the email we got from our friend, longtime friend, John Sturrock, over in the UK. And he was asking about the London game that's coming up, and he says it's sold out. In fact, it's sold out in no time at all, John says. He managed to get one. He is going to travel from Lancashire down to London for the game, and he was wondering, Dave, if you're going to be making the trip over, and if anybody else who is listening to the podcast might be interested in having a meetup in London. So what do you think? Are you going over? And if not, I think we should probably encourage other people to kind of reach out and, you know, get in touch with each other and do a Packers therapy meetup. I imagine Dr. Klaus is going to be there. And I imagine Guy and maybe Steven, and I know there's going to be a few others.
So we haven't talked about this because I am going.
Oh, good.
Excellent. I am going. Yeah. So I have my tickets, my plane tickets at least, and I'm meeting Klaus in London.
Excellent.
Both he and his sons were meeting and staying in London.
Oh, good.
And
then to meet the sons. Good.
Yep. And we are connecting with Guy and Steven. And I think Guy and Steven have a ticket for Klaus and me. So I'm hoping, because otherwise I'm going and watching on TV. But I'm going to stay for a week. But nice. I think on the Saturday before I talked to Klaus, I think we would like to find out a way to meet up with anyone that's going to the game, that listens to the podcast, that would like to meet these cast of characters. We're going to try to find a place to do that. So, John, for you specifically, we'll reach out and kind of give you details. But if anyone else wants to get together the night before of the game, just write an email to PackersTherapy at Yahoo.com, right? I want to say gmail.com. Well,
it's PackersTherapy at Yahoo.com. I believe that's also the place where people can give us money.
That's right. Okay.
On PayPal too. So yeah.
But yeah, reach out and I'll make sure that you have details. It'd be really fun to, I haven't met Guy and Steven. It'd be really fun to meet John. Yeah. And anyone else that can make it, I think that would be super fun. So please reach out if you are interested.
And unlike the Kansas City game, that one will count for real in the standings. So we will talk more about that as the weeks progress here, so that people can get together and get to know each other and enjoy the Packers together. So anyway, Dave, let's talk a little bit, not so much about the game, unless you have observations about the game that, you know, that you want to share. But I think the most interesting thing right now is probably these roster battles. We're doing this on a Sunday morning, and the roster, I think 3 o'clock on Tuesday, I think is when they have to be down to their 53. Although Goody likes to talk about the roster being 69. Now, I don't know if that goes along with the, you know, people at Lambeau like to be on top. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I guess he's talking, I think he's talking not just about his favorite number, but about the number of people, the 16 that can be on the practice squad. Mm-hmm. And so then giving you effectively a roster of 69. So let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, if it's okay with you, it's your podcast after all.
Yeah, yours too. Go ahead.
If you'd like to talk a little bit about these roster things, I've written a couple of things down here in terms of what I think are kind of the interesting remaining roster battles. And there's not a lot of them really, because I think a lot of the roster is set. But the one that jumps right out to me at the beginning is this competition for the third running back. Mm-hmm. Now, it's between, I think, Goodson and Taylor at this point. Taylor played for them last year after Hill was injured, and Goodson has just sort of arrived on the scene. And the guy had a beautiful touchdown run, that 24-yard run. Granted, there was a big hole, but, you know, he found it, got through it quickly, and then just did a beautiful, you know, kind of 360, spun around a guy and got in the end zone for a touchdown. But he's done things like that, you know, periodically during the preseason. And he also seems like a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield.
Right.
And I like that, but it seems to me like with their third running back, they really want somebody that is going to be able to, you know, pick up blitzers. And he did not seem completely comfortable with that. Don't know if you could see it live or not, but, you know, he's not natural at doing that. And I also don't know that he has a special teams value, certainly based on the way he bobbled that kick and wound up, you know, going back into the end zone, having to come out and got, you know, stuck at the 5 yard line. That didn't help his case at all. So while I think he's a better player from scrimmage, in terms of what I think they're looking for, it's probably going to be, you know, Patrick Taylor, who's going to wind up as the number three running back. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, it's further complicated by the fact that Amari Rodgers could also play the role that Tyler Goodson could have as well, right? So had 3 carries. One was kind of a more traditional, you know, there are a couple of jet sweeps, but there's one that was, I guess it was kind of a jet sweep, but he didn't sort of run toward the sideline. It kind of cut up the middle. You know, could he sort of serve as sort of a third running back? He can catch, obviously, as a wide receiver. And, you know, is he and Tyler Goodson just really similar? So if you have an Amari Rodgers, when are you going to use Goodson? And so he's just going to sit on the roster. The other thing is, you know, I think Patrick Taylor can play special teams as a tackler. I don't think Goodson does that at all, right? It's not.
No, he's a returner strictly, I think.
Yeah. Right. So if you have a returner and you need someone, and they desperately need someone to play special teams well, and I didn't notice Patrick Taylor having a good game against the Kansas City, but I thought against the Saints, he had like a solo tackle, which kind of stood out. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think Patrick Taylor probably makes the team for the special teams reasons. I think they're going to have to keep a couple people that are just dedicated to special teams. Cause they're just so God awful at it. But I wonder, you know, Goodson's probably the one guy of the, you know, probably at least over Taylor that probably would be a danger of being picked up by another team. But I'm also surprised, you know, every team probably has a Tyler Goodson that they're worried about holding on to. Yep. And, you know, I think I'm always surprised each year that a guy that was really hot in camp that got cut does make it back more often than not, because all teams have, you know, Goodsons and Patrick Taylors out there. So I'm guessing what they do is keep Taylor for special teams, because I think Taylor has a better chance of making the practice squad He doesn't necessarily stand out, but I think we need Taylor to suit up on the first game just for special team purposes.
Well, what do you think about this? Maybe they cut them both, and because of what you said about Rodgers, maybe Amari Rodgers becomes, in effect, your third running back, and they can save a roster spot, and maybe they can then keep an additional wide receiver, because that's another one of the battles is, are you going to keep Winfrey or are you going to keep Torre? And, you know, he looked, to me, he looked really, really good at getting open, and he looked good in space. And if that's the case and you wind up having to keep, you know, an extra wide receiver, then maybe you cut both of those running backs and you, you know, have Amari Rodgers as being sort of your, you know, Tyler Irvin sort of, you know, extra running back, jet sweep guy. He's going to play a lot probably anyway, and that gives you flexibility elsewhere. What do you think about that idea?
I think that's possible if, let's say, Juwan Winfrey is your best special teams guy out of that bunch, right? So you can keep Winfrey as an extra receiver because Rodgers is kind of a receiver slash running back. I think that's possible. But if Patrick Taylor is better on special teams than Winfrey, then I think, you know, Winfrey could be on that bubble as well. So I don't know, and I don't watch it close enough, you know, who is the best special teams on coverage, not just return, but I suppose maybe as a blocker as well. But who on, because they're just struggling on punt returns and kickoff returns. I mean, it's just so awful. And watching it at the stadium, you can kind of see the bigger picture. And I really try to pay attention to it. It feels like they have a lot of wide receiver type guys on special teams that seem like their only job is to go run down the field and take up a blocker. It's not to go after the ball. It's to take a blocker on. And then maybe, I guess that's to allow, you know, another guy to make the tackle. But it seems like there's quite a few people crashing into people without any kind of reach toward the guy with the ball. It's no wonder that they're getting it just feels to me that the objective is skewed. It's not get that guy. It's more take the guy who's supposed to block for that guy. And that's where I'm looking at Winfrey and a bunch of their sort of safety and cornerback types that are playing on special teams. They're just sort of going into the pile, but really not with a purpose, it doesn't feel like. So they really need to have somebody that will kind of fly around and throw their body at the returner, not just a blocker. And I don't know if that's Winfrey or Taylor. I'm guessing that those are the two that you'd be picking among that you'll want starting on special teams.
Well, Winfrey, of course, has the Aaron Rodgers bump. And I, you know, after the episode a couple of years ago, where Rodgers comes out and, you know, is touting a guy and then the guy gets cut, that led, I think, to some of the hard feelings that existed. And I'm not sure that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is his role as assistant or associate general manager, whatever it is. I think that's going to give, you know, Winfrey, you know, some value. That's what makes me think, you know, they cut both of the running backs and they keep Winfrey as well as their draft pick, Torre. They keep them both that way and they keep Rodgers happy at the same time. So it will be interesting to see what they do, and we'll do another podcast, you know, a week or so when we kind of look at the roster, but it would not surprise me to see them do something like that, which may be a minor surprise, but it would allow them to accomplish a couple of things in different parts of the roster. Looking at other places, when we're talking about, you know, where you can economize, it brings up the question of Caleb Jones. Now, you saw him in person.
Mm-hmm.
These are big guys, right? These NFL guys are big guys.
Yeah.
And then he stands in the huddle and he makes these big guys look small.
Yeah. It's true on the field too. It's like, where is he? There he is. Like, there's no question where he is.
And, you know, and he's not just a big guy that can't do anything. It looks like he moves pretty well. He's got these really long arms. They can push guys out. No, he's not a finished product. But I just have a hard time imagining that they are going to expose this guy to waivers and have somebody else take a flyer on him. I kind of think that's why you are looking for places to economize in your roster so you can sneak guys through. Now, granted, I think what they would probably do is they would claim him originally for the 53, and then once everyone's rosters are set, then maybe they would try to release him and sneak him through the practice squad, but not in the first in the first go round, because they probably have more chance of retaining him if they let him go later, because he's obviously a project, but he's really intriguing because not just because he's big, but because he's got some athletic ability as well. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you could really see much from where you were, but again, on television, you know, the guy looks credible, and I don't know if you had any impressions at all from seeing him, you know, in person, besides the fact that he's big.
Yeah, just saw that he's big. Yeah, it was kind of hard to kind of see if he was effective with this block. I thought a few running plays, it looks like he can push his guy around, certainly. But it was really hard to tell from watching it live. And the offensive line is just hard anyway. Did the running back go the right direction and everything else? So, but, you know, given Bakhtiari and Jenkins are still, mm-hmm. you know, not 100% that we know, we don't know if they're going to play, would you carry another offensive lineman, especially one that has promise like that? I you're right. I think you might carry a guy like that and maybe give up on Goodson or Torrey for that reason. I mean, those are all question mark spots, though, right? Wide receiver, we don't really know who's going to be the starting three, say, at the end of the year. Is it the three that is going to be Cobb and Lazard and Watkins, or is it going to be a mix of other guys? So do you have Torrey in there in case you get an injury or someone doesn't do as well as you had hoped? Offensive line, you have the two injuries you need to come back. If you had those guys, maybe that would be easier. Running back, we don't value running back as much, but Aaron Jones gets hurt a lot too. So mm-hmm. can you just go with kind of two running backs and Amari Rodgers? That's a little risky too. I don't know what they're going to value. It's a really interesting puzzle.
Well, a lot of it is, you know, we don't have the luxury of knowing, you know, what they're seeing on film and the other factors they're taking into consideration. From where, you know, I sit, which, you know, is not terribly comfortable at the moment. but from where I am, I'm not convinced that David Bakhtiari is going to be available, you know, for the whole season. And if he is available, I'm not sure he's going to really be himself and not have the risk of, you know, having that knee injury flare up again like it did after he played 26 snaps or so against Detroit. So because of that, you know, it would seem like they might want to make sure that they have options. I know they got Yash, and he did well for them. He probably should have played in the playoff game last year. But I think they need some more depth behind that because guys get hurt, and Jenkins is a really good example. You know, he was your best lineman last year, and then he gets hurt, and you're, you know, scrambling around looking for retreads and that sort of thing. So it will be interesting to see what they do on that. It might be, you know, what they do with Caleb Jones might be a bit of a clue how they feel about their offensive line depth generally. So that is something to stay tuned for as well. Something that I think you probably did notice in person was that great 4th-and-1 play by Jack Heflin, where you maybe didn't know, but he was totally unblocked. They came in and made the play in the backfield on 4th-and-1, just like demolished the running back.
Yeah.
And it just sort of highlighted, now, not that, you know, running through an open gap and, you know, nailing a running back is necessarily a big deal, but it highlighted the fact that Heflin's a pretty good player. You know, he was a trash can full of dirt or whatever the hell they call him. You know, he is really a difference, I think, against the run. He's kind of, you know, maybe a better version of Tyler Lancaster. I kind of like what the guy offers, but he's a fringe player. And when you already have five defensive linemen that you like, he might become expendable. Would be a damn shame, because I think he would be somebody that another team, again, might take a little bit of a flyer on because he's really good, especially in the run game, maybe doesn't give as much in the pass game. And I could see that, you know, certain teams may have a deficiency and say, yeah, we'll take a chance on this guy. You know, we've seen the Packers do that very sort of thing and find a niche player that can help them in certain situations. So that is another case. Do they keep, you know, six instead of five on the defensive line, with the sixth being Jack Heflin, or do they just assume that no one's going to want him and they'll be able to sneak him again through to the practice squad?
Well, he was on the team last year, right? He was on the 53 at one point.
I think, yeah, he was at one point, but I think he might have been one of those guys that started the season on the 53. They cut him, put him in the practice squad, and then I think you're allowed three games where you're allowed to be elevated from the practice squad without having to go through any kind of waivers to go back on the practice squad. But I think after those three games, then you have to go through the waiver process. And I think he was one of those guys. He was sort of a fringe 53 sort of guy last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's useful and valuable, especially because I've not seen a lot from Devontae Wyatt. He's a first-round draft choice, and of course they're going to keep him around because he's a first-round draft choice. But at this point, I mean, a guy like Chris Slayton and Jack Heflin, I think they've outplayed Devontae Wyatt, but those guys are probably on the bubble, and it wouldn't surprise me to see both of those guys get cut, because right now you're hoping that Wyatt develops into something, but he's right now it's not encouraging. It's too soon to say. It's only preseason. We don't know what's going to happen, but he does not look like the player that the other two guys are. Of course, they've both had some NFL experience where Wyatt's not had any of that.
Right. Yeah, and you got to give him time, I suppose. And I thought Brian Baldinger? He does some Twitter sort of film breakdown, and he pointed out that both our first-round picks had a good game. And so he pointed out two plays, one by Quay Walker. That was a very good play. I guess I didn't see it in real time. Did I notice that it really jumped off the page? But when I saw the replay, you know, he identified the running back and closed really fast. And I thought, it looked easy for him, but I can remember a lot of times that A.J. Hawk getting there a second late, guy jukes and A.J. flies right by, and then he's up for 8 yards, right? So I thought, you know, him catching and sort of getting creamed right as he caught the ball, that was a good play. And then he did point out like a spin move by Devontae Wyatt, and I thought maybe, you know, he was getting a lot of negative press before the Chiefs game, and he had pointed out this one play. So, but it doesn't really matter. He's going to be on the team. You're not going to give up on your first round pick. You know, if Heflin, and I think Chris Slayton too, I think Chris Slayton seems to be around the ball a lot. So I just wonder if the Packers trade a guy before the cut so they can get a pick or something.
Yeah, they already did that. And maybe you missed it because you were, you know, traveling over to KC, but Cole Van Lannen, the former UW Badger, got traded for, I think, a conditional seventh round pick. And I want to say he went to the Jaguars. So they can certainly do that. And maybe they might do that with some of these guys who they think have value elsewhere, and they can get, you know, some kind of late round pick like they did for Van Lannen. So it remains to be seen, but it seems to me a real shame that some of these guys that are producing might not have jobs because they're kind of holding that spot for a first round pick who you think is really going to develop. And we both know that Kenny Clark, you know, wasn't Kenny Clark.
Right.
You know, his first training camp. He didn't really start to show a lot until the playoffs in his first season, when he kind of jumped out there against the Cowboys. But the other guys they have are, they've been in NFL camps before, and maybe that's why they look a little better right now. And, you know, give Wyatt, a season, you know, under his belt, and he may look a lot different next year. So if he's got the kind of talent that you invested so much in him, you're probably going to wait and see if that pays off. I mean, that's like you would, I guess, with a stock, right? You know, if you make a big investment in it, you're probably more prone to seeing if that's going to pay off and see if your evaluation was right, rather than just, you know, cut your losses and move on.
Right, right. Yeah, they're deep at that position. I wonder, but it's a position they value. I feel like they do like the defensive line, and that's a spot that they could keep an extra. Now, defensive end,
That seems to be a little bit more shallow. So, I wonder if there's any player that's going to make the 53 that's not in Green Bay right now, that's someone that another team will cut that they'll go out and grab. The Packers, the way they've worked in the past, we sit here, we talk about Heflin or Chris Slayton, and they end up both being cut.
Yeah. I kind of think that's what's going to happen, probably. Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah. Now, they'll try to get those guys, through to the practice squad. And this is something I've heard a lot in this past week, that fans of certain teams, and that would be you and I with the Packers, tend to value their guys a lot more than teams around the league do. And so, oh my God, we can't, get rid of Jack Heflin or Chris Slayton. And then they just, sail right through. So it may be that we're just overvaluing those guys based on, what we see, because we don't watch, the other 31 teams in their preseason. Well, I guess we've watched a couple of the other ones because they've played against the Packers. So anyway, another guy in the bubble, also on the defensive side of the ball, is Abernathy. And I thought that he, and maybe this is the play you were talking about earlier, where he was interfered with when he was making that goal line.
Yeah.
What I thought was going to be an interception. And in the replay, he definitely was picked. It was, illegal, and that should have been a penalty. But he was, right there to make the play. I don't know that he would have, taken it the other way, for 99 yard interception return, but he pretty much, would have caught that ball had the receiver, not the intended receiver, but the other receiver who was picking for him, had he not made that illegal move, that would have been an INT. And that was another one of those instinctive plays that Abernathy made like the week before. He not only had the great interception the week before, but he also made a terrific play on a bubble screen. And that's a guy that I'm like, okay, he jumps out. I don't know what he shows in practice. I don't know what his value is on special teams. But Micah Abernathy is a guy at a position of need, and that's safety right now. And I would really like to see them, kind of get that guy through, because he's a dude that makes plays, and there's something to be said. Desmond Bishop, is a dude that made plays in the preseason, and you think about that, and it's like, I'd like to see them keep guys around like that who have that particular ability. So I don't know if he's going to, squeak through, though, because they've got other guys, they got draft choices that they like. And with the injury to Savage, Savage has been hurt for most of training camp. I think that's a position where they need some depth too.
Yeah. The defensive backs, let me go through, first let me ask you, Abernathy, was he an undrafted or was he drafted?
No, he was undrafted. They picked him up just like 2 weeks ago, because after Savage got hurt, they needed some depth. And so they brought him in. And then he just kind of popped out. He was not a drafted guy at all. He's a guy they picked up, as they say, off the street.
So here, including safeties and defensive backs, which we think is, right, they're very good on the starting side, but depth, exactly, is interesting, right? So yep. I'm going to list out the guys that we know are going to make the team. It's Adrian Amos, mm-hmm, Darnell Savage,
of course,
Jair Alexander, Rasul, right, Douglas,
yep,
and Eric Stokes.
Yeah, right? I think we can count on those people, yes.
Okay, so then I don't know what tiers. I'll put a tier one, tier two. Tier one being kind of likely or unlikely would be your tier two. So Abernathy, would you give him a one or a two grade?
I would give him – what were the definitions again on tier
one? Tier one being you think they'll make the team, and tier, okay, two is they'll probably be cut.
He's probably a tier two. I would like to see him make it. But I don't think they value him the same way that I do.
What about Tariq Carpenter?
I think that's a guy that they value more. They made more of an investment in him as well. And again, when you draft a guy, I think you're more likely to want to keep that guy around. And so I think he's a guy that they're probably going to wind up keeping. And I've seen a little bit there. I wouldn't blame him for doing that. The guy's got good size. I mean, 6'3", 230. I mean, that's a really good size for a safety, and I'm sure they're intrigued by that. So I think he's probably gonna make it.
Well, I think he's good against the run, kind of questionable against the pass, but that's – and it's right. a draft pick too, right? What about Shamar Jean-Charles?
Well, he's a draft pick from last year, and he has looked a lot better this preseason than last preseason. So I think – and I think also they think he can play in the slot, which is something they need. So, yeah, I think he's a tier one guy.
And the other two that I think are – I think have a good chance of making. You got Vernon Scott, who's hurt, but I think they want him as a safety backup. But then the is it Dallin Leavitt, the guy he got hurt. He was like a special teams guy.
He hurt his shoulder, and I think they don't want to put him on IR because they lose him for the whole season. So he'll probably take up a roster spot. Then they put him on IR, and then I think you only have to miss 6 games, I think, like that from IR. So yeah, I think that's a guy that I don't know if they like so much, but I think Passaccia likes him a real lot. Isn't he the guy that Passaccia called the Aaron Rodgers of special teams or something like that?
We could use that. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of doubt that he is. It may be a little hyperbole there, or hyperbole for some of our listeners. I would say that I didn't like what I saw in the limited amount of time, you know, in that first game, but they like him a lot. He's probably a tier one guy in terms of how they see things.
All right. Then I'm going to list off the rest and tell me if you think,
by the way, Vernon Scott, I think I think he was already cut. I think they did an injury settlement with him. So I don't think he's on the team anymore.
Oh, he's gone.
I think that was an injury settlement.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Well, let me list off the rest and tell me if you think any of these guys make the team. Devontae Cross, Sean Davis, Innis Gaines, Cabian Ento, Rico Gafford, and Keyshawn Nixon. You think any of those guys make the team?
Okay. Let me go through some of these. I know they like Innis Gaines. He's one of those guys. He made a couple of plays, and he also whiffed on a couple of plays, and he stood out for that reason. But, you know, around the ball. So there's something to be said there. And I think they also show him now second on the depth chart. So he probably is going to make it through. I think they like Sean Davis, too. I don't know, you know, the extent to which they like him, but I think he's a guy they like as well. But Ento, I believe, is a project. He's a converted wide receiver. I think he's going to wind up not making the club, but probably on the practice squad. They've invested a lot in him in terms of converting him from a wide receiver to a defensive back. Nixon, for the older listeners, I would say Nixon's the one, but I don't think he makes the 53. But I think they like him. And so he's another guy that wouldn't surprise me to see them try to get through to 53. I would be surprised somebody else would claim it. And same thing with Sean Davis. Now, Devondre Cross, I'll be up front here. I don't recall seeing him at all.
I don't either. Yeah.
During the preseason. So I
35 is his number. I get. Yeah, yeah. There's also Keandre Thomas.
I heard his name, but I can't say that he really jumped out at me at all, other than I do like his name though. Oh, and then Rico Gafford. Okay, now that's a guy that's hard to miss because he got burned again this past week.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and now the thing about him though is I understand that he was clocked at his pro day as at the 40 at 4.22. And that is, I mean, why he's not, you know, trying out for the Olympic team with numbers like that, I'm not sure. But they like him as a special teamer because of his speed and his abilities that way. And I would not be surprised at all if he's a tier one for them because they like that speed. And I think they brought him in specifically as a special teamer. From scrimmage, the guy does not look like he can play. But, you know, Jared Bush was challenged also from scrimmage, but played 6 years and was a really good special teamer and did intercept a ball in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And
don't, maybe, can't ever forget that.
I know. And then maybe, you know, Rico Gafford is that kind of guy too. I don't like him. If he had to go out and play from scrimmage for some reason, injuries, whatever it might be, I would be terrified. But, you know, in his environment as special teamer, he might be just exactly what they need. So I'm thinking that he probably makes it.
The thing is, you know, they got a lot of like guys on special teams. Like Rico Gafford, he's 5'10", 184 pounds. Mm. And that guy has got to use his quickness. So I guess as a gunner, maybe. But I just feel like a lot of these guys are just getting engulfed by blockers and just giving up huge returns. So I know this is the one that Bisaccia really liked, also brought in, right? So
yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
I think he sees something there. But last year I would have said, look, special teams, you know, let's just be really good on offense, defense, and let special teams shake out. I just, this game, watching them give up return after return, I feel like, no, there's got to be some guys that are good at special teams if you're going to win a Super Bowl. Like it was true in 96 and it's true now.
You know, what they keep on saying, and I you know, you listen to different, you know, podcasts, and, you know, I kind of like Bukowski on Lockdown Packers. And, you know, his comment is the special teams look terrible, but the word is the Packers are going to play a lot more starters on special teams because they value it that much. Now, how that will impact, you know, the injury situation is a whole different question. But they seem to be committed, and I wouldn't be surprised if Bisaccia, you know, came on and said, "I'll take this job. I'll take your $2 million a year, but you got to promise me that you're going to put some real talent out there, because, you know, I don't want to look like an idiot." You know,
right.
So that may be what we'll see. We might see special teams populated by more of the regular players, and they may look great, but they will rely on guys like Leavitt and Gafford, you know, to supplement the regular players that they have. And it won't just be a place where you put your subs and scrubs to run down the field. I hope so, because again, the special teams look just like a mess again this time. And it's really tough to evaluate because you don't know what they're going to throw out on the field in that first game against the Vikings. So I don't want to go, you know, too crazy here, but it would be a real shame to have the season turn again like last year's did on special teams.
Right. Now, do you think the first game's going to be rusty like it did against the Saints last year? Because is that just something we just live with now? Because walking in, and I said to my son-in-law, I'm like, there is not a single starter out there other than maybe Quay Walker.
Yeah.
And Chris Barnes could possibly get some playing time, but everyone else is second, third team here.
Yeah. Walker was only out there because he's going to be a starter and he needs some NFL reps. I mean, that's why he was out there. And I thought on television, I thought he looked great, but I'm still uncomfortable with a guy wearing number 7 at inside linebacker, but still, you know, the guy looked like he was like he could play the game, and we'll find out, you know, for sure in a couple weeks. But the rest of it, I don't, you know, you really don't know what's going on. And I can't imagine that they'll be as bad as they were last year against the Saints in the first game, but I can't also imagine that they're going to look like a finely tuned machine when Rodgers hasn't, with this receiving core, hasn't had any meaningful reps. I mean, he's got training camp, but he hasn't really had any of the mini camps or any of this other stuff. Christian Watson, you know, wasn't even playing at the beginning of training camp. I mean, there's going to be so much of guys just kind of working off the rust in that first game. I don't know what the Vikings have done in preseason.
Yeah, just I'm looking up here.
Yeah, yeah.
So then the third game, at least, good old what's-his-face, that quarterback. Did not play. I don't see any running backs or receivers. It looks like they're kind of doing the same thing. I do not see.
Well, I mean, so maybe it's a fair fight then. I'm just worried about Za'Darius Smith because he's a guy who plays on emotion, And, yeah. you know, he will have blood in his eye, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that is concerning against, you know, an offensive line where, you know, if Jenkins plays, if Bakhtiari plays, Bakhtiari hasn't played, you know, he's played, what, 26 meaningful snaps in the past, you know, year. And then Jenkins coming off an ACL 10 months ago. It makes me very uncomfortable wondering what they're going to face against the Vikings. But that's a subject for the next podcast. Let's kind of close this one out by talking about the subject we always have to talk about, Jordan Love. Now, again, it's hard to know how you saw this in person, but I was encouraged with how the guy was seemingly more decisive, with the way he was, you know, zipping the ball with confidence into certain places. Now, he made one horrific throw at the end of the first half that even Brett Favre covered his eyes when he saw that. I mean, that was not good. But more times than not, I thought he was making good decisions, making them decisively, and he was throwing a crisp ball. And I mean, the guy's not starter material, but I'm beginning to think maybe it wouldn't be a complete disaster if they had to go with him for a couple of games because Za'Darius Smith, you know, twisted Aaron Rodgers' ankle, and so they have to go with. Well, hey, I mean, it's on the table. That happened against the Bears a couple of years ago. You remember?
I do.
The first game, and you know that kind of goofed up Rodgers' season when he hurt his knee. So, he's also an older guy now. I mean, Rodgers is the older he gets, he's going to be more prone to injury, and they've got a youngish offensive line. I mean, these things might happen. So you might see, you know, Jordan Love playing some meaningful snaps. I have more confidence now. I don't have confidence in him, but I have more confidence now than I did at any point prior to this. There is one thing I will note, though, that I noticed during the game, but I wasn't able to really articulate it. And I don't know if you recall this. There was one time he was flushed out of the pocket. He had to roll to his right toward the sideline. And he looked, I think, for Tyler Davis, I think is who he was looking for. And he was like, I don't know, 25 yards downfield, and he threw the ball 22 yards. And the thing was, I thought, well, you know, maybe he was just throwing it away, or he was throwing it to a place where only, you know, Davis could catch it, and it wasn't going to be interesting. And I thought, okay, fine. But then I was, you know, reading some of the post-game stuff, and the comment was, you know, he's got a good arm, but he doesn't have an arm like Brett Favre or like Aaron Rodgers. We've gotten accustomed to seeing guys roll that way and make that play because they can. Mm-hmm. Chances are, Love, while he's got a plus arm, he doesn't have enough arm to make that kind of play. And I thought that was a really interesting observation because I've gotten so accustomed to that being a makeable play. And the guy, the writer, I forget which writer it was saying, well, no, that's not a common play that quarterbacks make. It's a common play that Packer quarterbacks have made over the last three decades. But Jordan Love was showing that, you know, that's the kind of challenge that most quarterbacks have, rolling to their right and trying to zip that ball 25 yards downfield is not an easy makeable play. And the reason it was short is because Love just didn't have the arm to get it there.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, well, that's an eye opener because like everybody else, I've gotten spoiled by seeing Hall of Fame quarterback play, and whoever they get, Jordan Love or whoever else, that's probably not a play that they're going to be able to make physically because that's not a play most guys can make.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And not everyone is superhuman like our last two quarterbacks.
Yeah,
I think if that was the play, that was what I looked over to my son-in-law and said, see that ball thrown into the dirt? We'll find out later. That's not his fault, right? That's
well, someone ran because it's not because God didn't give him the arm to zip it in there.
Yeah, no. The receiver ran. He should have been able to dive and catch that ball, or he ran the wrong route. Jordan Love doesn't have any faults out there. Just wanted to let him know that right up front. I thought the other thing that I saw that I thought was doesn't make me feel super confident is there is one throw he made out to like the running back out in the flat. And I just felt he was late with it.
Like he was open, and I don't know if he was doing a Rodgers thing where he was checking downfield one last time, but it just felt like he's a little uncertain and threw late, and you know, we got less yardage than if he'd have just gotten rid of it right away. And so I think you're right that I see improvement. I think my confidence is better than it was, say, last year, but it's not at the level that I'm comfortable with him playing in a live game. I don't think he's ready yet. Maybe next year he'll be even better and we'll feel like, yeah, we've got something here. Maybe by the fifth year, it'll be even better than that. So maybe down the road, he'll be a very fine quarterback. But as I see it now, he had a couple good throws, and certainly that is encouraging, but kind of his overall body of work is mixed at best. His quarterback rating at 61.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the interception.
He was better than that, though. Yeah, he was better than that.
We've said that three times, right?
Yeah.
Well, three times he looked better than his rating. And, you know, he throws an interception, at least one a game. This one was, you know, they were probably pressing toward the end of the half. I get that. You know, it's, I'm just not confident in him. And honestly, I don't know what it looks like on TV. To me, Etling looks like he's got more, is more decisive, and he throws the ball just as crisp as Love does. So, and can run a little bit more. So I'm not ready to say Etling is better than Love. And I certainly don't think they're going to keep Etling and get rid of Love. But honestly, for the eye test, from what I could see, I thought they're at least the same. And maybe Etling to me looked a little bit better, but it's just, I didn't enjoy the game as much just because Love kept coming in and coming in. It just felt like it was Groundhog Day. It was just kind of maybe a throw or two might be fine, but it was just ultimately disappointing.
I think Etling would be one of those guys that they'll try to get in the practice squad because he's credible. I mean, you know, again, if, you know, Rodgers does get injured, I think he's a credible, you know, backup guy.
And he'll make
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's anyone out there that's just dying to have Etling.
And, you know, he can run. We've seen that. He's athletic. I think there's a lot, you know, to like about that guy. But it's like we were talking about with Devontae Wyatt. You've got a first round investment in Jordan Love. You put a lot of effort into kind of developing him. So he's going to be their guy, their backup, and they're going to have to make a decision on him next offseason, assuming that Rodgers is going to come back for 2023. They have to make a decision. Well, are they going to, you know, do that fifth year option on Love? And I don't know if they're going to have any more information than what we've had in the preseason. Ideally, they won't, because Love won't have to play. But it's something to monitor and pay attention to, because it is the most important position on the field. Even if the Packers continue to stockpile defense and emphasize the running game, even if they become that kind of team, which it seems like they are, you still need a plus quarterback. You don't have to have a Hall of Famer, but you got to have a guy, you know, that can make the plays. And something that you alluded to, Dave, I think is really important. You know, Jordan Love, for whatever reason, maybe it's because he's relatively young, his mental processor does not seem to be as fast as it needs to be that plus kind of player. And you mentioned he seemed like he was late on at least one throw or a couple of throws. And I think that's probably right. I'm not sure if it's a function of experience or if it's a function that, you know, he just doesn't, you know, have that ability to recognize and diagnose or just feel things as quickly as you have to feel them. You remember the old Kurt Warner thing, right? Where he thought the big change in his career was when he had to play in the Arena Football League and everything was so fast that he got accustomed to making really quick decisions. And then he went back to the NFL and he was so much better because the game had slowed down for him because he had gotten used to a faster pace. And I'm not, you know, I know in baseball, having, you know, played a little bit of that, I mean, that's why they give you a leaded bat. And that's why, you know, they set you up with fastballs at closer range so that, you know, your reflexes become quicker, you know, your ability to see and judge things. And I imagine there's probably exercises they do for NFL quarterbacks too, to try to increase that processing speed. I think Aaron Rodgers just, you know, had the God-given ability that his mind works quickly. I think, you know, Brett Favre, I think, was more of a feel guy. He just sort of felt things, which is why he threw the interceptions that he did, because, you know, the feeling wasn't always accurate, but more times than not, he just had a feel for the game. I don't know if Jordan Love has either of those things. I mean, that may be the difference between success and failure for him long term.
Yeah, because he's got tools, but I would think just the easy throws, you know, just get them out and get positive yardage. And it's just so much going on, it seems like, in his head. Yeah, I agree. I just don't know. Maybe the change of scenery could help him down the road. Right now, as we start week one, if Rodgers gets hurt, I feel like I don't know what games we'd win with him. I think now he's just not ready. I'm not ready to just say get rid of him and dump him. He's a bum. I just think he's not ready yet, and that's disappointing.
Well, I guess, you know, all we can say, I guess, to kind of conclude it for right now is he's better than he was, but he's not as good as he needs to be. Now, maybe that's the summary statement. Now, we'll wrap up this podcast now. We will not do any betting lines because we intend to come back a week hence. And we'll have a better idea who's on the roster then, and you know maybe a little bit how the Vikings are shaking out, and we'll do some betting lines then. But we got in that regard, we got an email this week from the head of our special investigative unit, Detective Sergeant Inspector General Andy Mundy, and he wrote his usual thoughtful email, but he concluded with this. He said that, I think with the unknown statistical leaders at wide receiver, running back, edge, and cornerback, the betting lines could be fun with lines like, for instance, will Watkins or Watson have more yards this week? Or running back touches, Jones or Dillon? And I thought that was a really good observation because we always would kind of laugh, you know, right? That Devontae Adams, you know, we have more or less than 10. You know, and so there's a lot more unpredictability. So the betting lines should be a little more varied, maybe a little more interesting in some regards this year because, you know, Watkins and Watson were on the team last year. So, you know, that'll make for a lot more difficulty for the guy setting the lines. And also this notion of running back touches. You got two guys who are going to be on the field together a lot more. And there's actually talk about each of those guys, you know, having 50 receptions each, you know, in the season. So, you know, which one of them will touch it more in a given week? You know, that's good. It's going to make my job a lot tougher, but I welcome the challenge. I am here, my friend, for the challenge. The last note that I have, and this is kind of in your realm of professional expertise. Did you see the Forbes estimates of the value of franchises? Did that?
Well, I saw the pack. I don't recall what the number was, but it was a much bigger number than I thought. And
4.25 billion is the value of the Packers franchise. 22% increase from last year.
Yeah, it's interesting why the increase. What caused a 22% increase, or why was it 22% less the year before than this year? Was there a contract that was signed, a TV contract, which kind of boosted the value of all the clubs? I can't think of why there would be such an increase.
Well, let's see here. In the article, all it says is the Packers actually, with a 22% increase, they fell from 13th to 15th in the NFL in terms of value. There are 14 teams valued at more than $4.25 billion. The Cowboys are first. Hey, did you see the value of the Cowboys, a team that has not won or even played in the Super Bowl since 1995.
I did not.
Their value, $8 billion.
Is that right?
That's almost twice.
Well, I wonder how much of that is tied into the size of the stadium and, you know, obviously geographic. You can't, you know, being in New York or Dallas is much better than being in Green Bay from geographic. Doesn't matter how popular they are. The land it sits on is just less, right?
True.
I guess I was surprised that they were that low relative to other teams. Do you have the list? I mean, what other teams? But I would think just, you know, your LA and Denver, like that they would be worth more just because they're in a bigger city.
Well, I do not have the full list, but you know, what really got me too was that the Cowboys are not only the most valuable franchise in the NFL. They are the world's most valuable sports team. And that is remarkable to me.
Go 1 through 10 at least. Dallas, New England, New York Giants, LA Rams, the Washington Commanders, San Francisco 49ers. Actually,
it's gotta be the land value. I think you're right about that, because that DC, that's gotta be valuable,
right?
Ground, yeah.
Now this is updated for 22, but they're showing San Francisco at 4.175. So I don't know why the Packers at 4.25 aren't on this list. But San Francisco, Chicago, the Jets, the Eagles, and Denver. I mean, those are all your, you know, Dallas, Boston, New York, LA, yeah, DC, San Fran. I mean, so the value is based on the team. And then you go from the bottom up. So the least valuable is, can you guess, based on if I
Buffalo.
Were to say Buffalo is the least valuable, yeah, right? Yeah. Even though they're a very good team. Buffalo, Cincinnati, Detroit, Cleveland, Tennessee, Arizona, Jacksonville, New Orleans, Carolina.
Arizona surprises me there. I thought that would have more value.
That's fair. I don't know what their stadium is like. The Chargers are 10, kind of going from 10th worst. So I guess in that way, Green Bay being in the middle of the pack is actually maybe remarkable, you know, given how small they are. They should be right next to Buffalo. And yet if they're ahead of Detroit and New Orleans and the Chargers, I would think the Chargers, they have a brand new facility. Now, I don't know if this is a slightly
old. Of course, they
old.
Share it, though, with the Rams, though, too. So I don't know if that impacts anything. If maybe if they had their own stadium in Los Angeles, that would increase their value. But sharing it with the Rams maybe changes it. And I would also think that the value of the Rams brand is probably higher, which would explain why they would have more value than the Chargers, even though they have the same stadium.
Okay. I'm looking at this list here. I don't see where the Packers fall in. But, they're at 15. So the one teams in front of them are Seattle, Miami, Denver, Houston, Philly, Las Vegas, San Francisco, the Jets, and the ones that we mentioned. So, I mean, these are all major teams. I mean, behind the Packers, Atlanta, Pittsburgh, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Baltimore. I mean, those are big cities. So it probably is pretty remarkable given the Packers' value with the size of the team and the city.
And I think that's probably what it comes down to. I mean, the Packers are probably as high as they are because of the brand value, but it's the other factors. Green Bay, Wisconsin, you know, I mean, the Fox River's nice and it's nice, setting the National Railroad Museum, they're right there on the river, along with St. Norbert College. I mean, it's a lovely setting.
Very lovely.
Yeah. But I think a lot of their $4.25 billion is probably tied up in the mystique and the culture and the history. Even though they have a great stadium, the land value is not going to be what it is for prime real estate in any of those other markets that you mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I found that to be interesting, and I thought we could wrap up the podcast, talking about what's really most important about football, and that's the money part of it.
Well, we are shareholders, for goodness sake.
We are. I can't wait till I cash mine in. Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's going to be a great day. 22% last year.
Yeah. Woo!
22% times zero equals.
I'll have to check that out. Yeah. you burst my bubble again, Dave. Jeez.
Doug.
All right. Well, let's wrap it now. We'll wait for Tuesday and see, how the roster shakes out. And there's always a few days after where there's, guys being claimed and, there's sometimes some trades made and stuff like that. So wait for all to kind of settle out like the bits of tea at the bottom of your cup. We'll see how that all settles down. And then a week or so, we'll come back with a podcast, get ourselves ready for the real games, for the Packers taking on the Vikings in a couple of weeks. We'll have the betting lines. I don't know if you want to even do any pop culture. Just save it until next week. Is there anything urgent, Dave? You can pop culture us here at the end. Do you have anything that you want to touch on?
The one I was going to mention is The Rehearsal. Have you heard about this show on HBO?
Yeah, I think I've read about it, but I have very little knowledge. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, it's so the guy, his last name is going to escape me. He did a show on it's, you can find that on HBO called Nathan for You. And that one is Nathan Fielder. The Nathan for You I was vaguely aware of, but what he would do on that show is he would show up to businesses that were struggling and he would propose a ridiculous idea to, you know, improve their business. And it's great. It's just, it's so entertaining because he's like a very earnest, he's a comedian, but he plays it very straight. And like, for example, I think one of the more famous ones is that there was a petting zoo that wasn't getting the crowd they wanted. So he staged a pig saving a goat from drowning, and it involved divers and like clear underwater mazes so the pig could only swim one direction. Well, apparently it got picked up like NBC and Good Morning America, and I mean it was a hoax, but it got picked up. It was national news.
Nice.
Anyway, so he has a new show called The Rehearsal, and the premise is that he asks people who have kind of problems that they want to solve, and then he will rehearse the solution ahead of time, and then you actually do the solution, and everything is filmed. But the amount of detail that they go into in rehearsing, just to give one quick example, is the first problem that he's solving is he finds a guy who says his problem is that he's on a trivia team, like you go to the bars and you do trivia nights.
Right. Yep.
And he's got a group of people. And he lied to them, telling them that he had his graduate degree, and he doesn't. So he wants to come. Yeah. So these are not high stakes problems. So he wants to tell them that he kind of misled them, but he's really afraid about this one woman in particular who he thinks will be really upset. So he asks him, like, how do you want to tell her? And he wants to take her to trivia, and then like during a break, he would tell her and apologize, whatever. So what he does then is says, okay, let's rehearse that. He goes to warehouse and rebuilds the bar where they're going to meet brick by brick, bottle by bottle, chair by chair. I mean, it's so insane the level of detail he does to make this practice go well. They map every conversation tree that could go. He stages every time they rehearse, they have a guy doing an actual trivia session. It's unbelievable. It's funny, and yet it's actually touching in a way, because you know you're getting to people like this guy, his insecurities. Like it's funny, but yet it's also like, oh, this is very real life. And then where the show goes to is unexpected. I'm on episode. I watched episode 3 and I could not believe what I saw. I wanted to bring it up because, Chris, you got to watch this. And like our pop culture could be to describe each of these episodes. It's crazy. If you watch episode 1, you will watch the rest. So just humor me. It's like 30 minutes. Watch the first episode and then maybe in the next podcast we can talk about it.
All right. I have an assignment. It's The Rehearsal on HBO.
Right.
And I will watch that first episode before we reconvene in a week down the line to talk about the betting lines and the Packers' final roster and what we can look forward to when Green Bay plays against the hated Vikings of Minnesota. So until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.